I'm Alex, a 16-year-old gay guy.
And I'm Callie, a 15-year-old bisexual girl. It might not seem like it, but the two of us have a lot in common.
The news came as Harry Potter fans packed New York City's Carnegie Hall for a reading from the final book with author J.K. Rowling.
Progress doesn't always move in a straight line. Let me take you to the land of
dreams. Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Bermuda backtracks on marriage equality, queer teens confront careless outing, and new releases bring novelized history and rhythmic revolution. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 4th, 2017. The government of Bermuda is trying to become the first in the world to annul marriage equality. Its Supreme Court ruled in May that denying civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples was a violation of fundamental human rights guaranteed by the British Overseas Territories Constitution. The government has been under pressure from anti-LGBT lawmakers and very vocal Christian religious leaders on the North Atlantic island to find a way to reverse course. The ruling Progressive Labour Party promised to do that during the recent election campaign. Minister of Home Affairs Walton Brown introduced a domestic partnership bill this week that would overturn the High Court ruling and create a separate legal status for same-gender couples that would also be open to heterosexual couples. Gay and lesbian couples that have already married, however, would be able to stay married. This topic has been a prolonged matter of great division in our country. The purpose of this public consultation period, he said, is to gain feedback from the public on the current draft bill regarding domestic partnerships. The consultation period ends on November 15th. The marriage of Bermudian native Winston Godwin and Canadian Greg DeRoche was the first to be recognized following their successful Supreme Court case. Their attorney, Mark Pettingill, was understandably disappointed by this week's government proposal. Clearly, an existing right could not be removed, he said, but there are other issues of law that will need to be sensibly considered. This week's news could also sink romantic weddings at sea being offered to same-gender couples by Bermuda-based cruise lines. At least one of them, P&O Cruises, has already accepted bookings for the first such weddings, scheduled for January aboard its ship Azura. Passage of the proposed domestic partnership bill would probably force the cruise line to cancel those ceremonies.
Meanwhile, Hong Kong's Immigration Department has asked the Court of Final Appeal, the Chinese city's highest court, to overturn a recent ruling granting a spousal visa to a British woman, identified only as QT, to live with her Hong Kong-based lesbian partner. QT had been forced to repeatedly apply for a tourist visa to be with her wife, identified only as SS, who had moved to the city for work. Had one of the couple been a man, the spousal visa would have been automatic. The Court of Appeal ruled in September that even though marriage is not open to same-gender couples in Hong Kong, it was in Britain when the women entered into a civil partnership in 2011, so the union should therefore be recognized. The decision said the Immigration Department failed to justify the indirect discrimination on account of sexual orientation. Hong Kong's first openly gay legislator, Raymond Chan, criticized the government's action, saying that it would rather spend taxpayers' money to appeal a case which, in my view, does not contribute to society or benefit anybody if won, than to support a major international sports, culture, and tourism event such as the Gay Games. In late October, organizers in Hong Kong, without much support from city officials, became the first in Asia to win a bid to host the quadrennial event. Following Paris in 2018, Hong Kong will host the Gay Games in 2022.
Taiwan's premier predicted this week that the island's lawmakers would open civil marriage to same-gender couples by the end of the year. Taiwan's Constitutional Court ruled in May that marriage inequality violates the Constitution, but gave the legislative yuan, or parliament, 2 years to make the necessary changes to marriage laws that would replace man and woman references with gender-neutral terms. Most observers expected lawmakers to take all of the 2 years the court allowed to pass a marriage equality bill. So Premier Lai Ching-te's prediction, part of a Facebook post published ahead of Taipei's annual LGBT Pride Parade, was somewhat of a surprise. "I support those who are in love with the right to be together," he wrote, "and wish them every success in the parade today." The executive yuan, similar to a governing administration's cabinet, has yet to submit a bill to the legislative yuan, which would be the first step in the process. Since Lai is head of the executive yuan, his prediction carries some weight. The final session of the legislative yuan this year began in September and ends in late December. Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen also posted a message of support ahead of the Taipei Pride Parade, insisting that the right to equality in marriage has been established. More than 123,000 people were at the 15th annual Taipei LGBT Pride Parade on October 28th, breaking all previous attendance records.
Elsewhere, Judge Colleen Collar-Cottley of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia ruled this week for the transgender plaintiffs who are suing in federal court to block President Trump's effort to ban them from military service. Their lawsuit was the first of a number of challenges to the proposed presidential ban filed in federal courts in different parts of the country. Judge Collar-Cottley wrote that the plaintiffs were likely to win their case on constitutional grounds and ordered the Pentagon to stay the course established under President Obama last year that opened military service to qualified transgender enlistees. The Justice Department, led by notoriously homophobic Attorney General Jeff Sessions, argued unsuccessfully that the lawsuit should be dismissed because the policy is still being reviewed. Even though a Pentagon study last year cleared the way for military service by qualified transgender people, the Defense Department responded to Trump's directive by beginning yet another study that will run through March of next year to determine how best to implement Trump's edict. The judge did not equivocate, however, deciding that the presidential directives are not genuinely based on legitimate concerns regarding military effectiveness or budget constraints, but are instead driven by a desire to express disapproval of transgender people generally. Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, which represents the transgender plaintiffs, told reporters that this is an important ruling from a very important court.
But a three-judge panel of Louisiana's First Circuit Court of Appeal upheld a lower state court ruling this week that reversed an executive order issued by Governor John Bel Edwards that protected LGBT people from discrimination in state government. The appeals court said it was an unconstitutional effort to expand state law, which, the ruling noted, offers no protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The unanimous ruling was a victory for Republican State Attorney General Jeff Landry, a likely challenger to the Democratic governor in the next election. Landry said in a media statement that this ruling affirms a notion of basic civics that the legislature makes the law, not the governor. The governor's office said he is considering an appeal to the Louisiana Supreme Court. "Discrimination in state government and by state contractors is wrong," Edwards said in a statement. "It makes us weaker and is bad for business and economic development."
In other news, the Disney Channel's popular teen-targeted show, Andy Mack, introduced the network's first gay storyline this week. In the season 2 premiere, 13-year-old Cyrus, one of the lead character's best friends, begins to realize that he has feelings for fellow teen Jonah and comes out to another Mack friend, Buffy, who is wonderfully supportive. The government of Kenya promptly banned Andy Mack from airing in the East African country because of what the Film Classification Board called inappropriate content. Its chair, Ezekiel Mutua, announced the ban in a tweet, writing that, "Children must be given correct information that family is a union between people of opposite gender." He later added on Facebook that, any other doctrine, teaching, or information is a heresy and a travesty. He then told Standard Media that, when it comes to protecting children from exposure to bad content, we are resolute and unapologetic. Gay content will not air in Kenya, period. Pink News cited MultiChoice, however, which distributes Disney programs in Kenya, that Andy Mack was not scheduled to air in the country anyway.
But finally, Mutua wasn't finished making ignorantly homophobic statements. Not after photographer Paul Goldstein's pictures of two male lions in Kenya's Masai Mara National Reserve, having what he called affectionate sex, went viral. Speaking to the Mail Online, Goldstein called what he saw remarkable. "I normally loathe any sort of humanizing with animals, and our documentary channels are full of it," he said, "but it was impossible not to smile. When lions mate, it normally lasts a few seconds," he explained. "These two were at it for over a minute, and the obvious affection afterwards was very evident, as opposed to the violent withdrawal when male and female mate." Mutua suggested in an interview with Nairobi News that the lion couple be sent for counseling to cure their same-gender attraction. "They have probably been influenced," he claimed, "by gays who have gone to national parks and behaved badly."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending November 4th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
People often make rude comments about LGBTQ people around us. Neither of us is fully out or stereotypically gay, so they probably don't know that we are LGBTQ.
It was a sexism that got to me. Women could not even be served in bars without a male escort.
Queer Youth Questions and Current Queer Arts are a couple of stops ahead and just a rainbow minute away on the Hogwarts Express.
The Wizard Gets Outed, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. As it turned out, Albus Dumbledore, Harry Potter's mentor and headmaster of Hogwarts, is gay. The news came in October 2007 as Harry Potter fans packed New York City's Carnegie Hall for a reading from the final book with author J.K. Rowling. During a question and answer session, one young fan asked if Dumbledore ever finds love. That's when Rowling revealed that the beloved character was gay. She explained how Dumbledore had been smitten with rival wizard Gellert Grindelwald before he was vanquished. When hearing the news, the audience was silent for a few moments, followed by a prolonged ovation. Rowling said, "If I'd known it would make you so happy, I would have announced it years ago." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Gracie Golden.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website lately?
For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show,
log on to
thiswayout.org.
In her CD, Dreamland, Jennifer Maidman writes of the conspiracy of dreamers.
Some literature is pure music, later in the program.
Is it too late now to say sorry?
Before saying sorry becomes necessary, members of the outcasting crew ask you to consider how your actions might affect the young LGBTQ people among you.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Dhruv, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcasters Callie and Alex share personal stories about being outed by friends, intentionally or otherwise. They speak about people who have made rude and homophobic comments around them, probably not knowing that they identified as LGBTQ. These experiences are common not only to Callie and Alex, but also to LGBTQ youths everywhere. And sharing them can help these people connect to others over their common struggles and find a new sense of community that they couldn't have found otherwise.
Hi, I'm Alex, a 16-year-old gay guy.
And I'm Callie, a 15-year-old bisexual girl. It might not seem like it, but the two of us have a lot in common. Even though people in the LGBTQ community differ in whom they're attracted to or how they identify, many of us find that we have experiences that are more or less the same.
A couple months ago, a close friend of mine, let's call her Sarah, was getting to know a guy at her music school. Sarah was telling him all the little details of her life, so of course she was describing all of her close friends, including me. Somehow, Sarah thought it best to tell him that I'm gay. I don't consider being gay as my most resounding characteristic, and she didn't need to tell him this. Sarah took me to meet him this summer in the city. I really don't hope to meet this strange, kind of rude teenage guy again. Needless to say, I would have preferred that Sarah had not outed me to him.
A similar thing happened to me just today. I was sitting at a table at school with a group of friends, all straight as far as I know, except for one who is gay. Of the group, I'm out only to him. He's out to all the others who were at the table, and he was making some sort of joke about straight people. He then said something along the lines of, "Only you get it, Callie." I think he realized his mistake immediately afterwards, and obviously he wasn't intentionally outing me, he's gay himself. No one commented on what he said and the conversation moved along, but I was still left feeling uncomfortable, wondering if anyone had caught what he had said. It's not a group of people that I'm worried about being judged by, I just wasn't ready to be out to them yet.
Just like this, we've found that because we are both LGBTQ teenagers in America, we have a lot of stories that pretty closely resemble each other.
For example, people often make rude comments about LGBTQ people around us. Neither of us is fully out or stereotypically gay, so they probably don't know that we are LGBTQ.
This past summer, I went backpacking with a group of other teenagers from across the U.S. A couple of them, likely not realizing that I'm gay, used anti-gay slurs casually throughout the trip without giving it much thought. When they said that some celebrity would go to hell for being gay, and that someone who liked them would go to hell too, that made me feel unsafe. I thought that if they knew I was gay, the slurs they used would now be directed at me.
And for me, some members of my extended family are not the most accepting of LGBTQ people. I remember my aunt acting as if it was strange that a priest hadn't said openly homophobic things. Apparently, he wasn't openly supportive of the LGBTQ community either, but just the fact that he wasn't obviously against us was notable to her.
Our shared experiences might be because we both live in suburban New York, and we inhabit the same society as each other, for the most part.
Beyond this, many LGBTQ people connect with each other over instances like these, whether they are gay or trans or any other part of the community.
This connection may be what defines this community and brings us together, regardless of our differences. Many people connect over common interests, similarities in their lives, and other stuff like that. For LGBTQ people, this is another thing that we can use to deepen our relationships and make them long-lasting.
And often, it can be detrimental when someone doesn't have anyone to relate to like this. So we should be thankful to know people who can understand us and to have a community where we're safe.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 50 public radio stations around the country. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Young love, our love, we share with deep emotion.
Hello, I'm Tab Hunter, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all of our sexually diverse communities.
Remember this.
This Way Out commentator Janet Mason reads about lesbians before the first revolution in Olympus Nights on the Square, while listening to Jennifer Maidman's Songs of Revolutions Present and Future.
Before being a lesbian was trendy, before marriage equality, before we were part of the LGBT movement, lesbians were simply women labeled sick and deviant, who somehow found a way to live in an extremely oppressive environment. Of course, those were the old days when almost everyone was oppressed. Fast forward half a century at least. Things have changed so much. I'm guilty of being one of the ones who thinks that society has moved on. Well, it should have. But hate crimes are up, including hate crimes against those of us in the LGBT community. And as the Advocate reports, hate crimes against those in the LGBT community are massively underreported. Those targeted may fear coming forward or doubt that anyone will care. Progress doesn't always move in a straight line. I was reminded of this when I read Olympus Nights on the Square, LGBT Life in the Early Post-War Years, 1945 to 1955, by Vanda. In Olympus Nights on the Square, we meet Al, short for Alice, a lesbian from a small town who moved to New York City, and Al works in the entertainment industry. Vanda is also a playwright, and dialogue drives her novels, making for interesting and engaging writing. The novel gives us a panoramic view of the times, seen through the eyes of her characters. I found it all very fascinating. I did at one point, however, find the oppressive tenor of the times tedious. It was the sexism that got to me. Women could not even be served in bars without a male escort. Gay men and lesbians lived in fear of being found out as what society labeled a sick person, sexual deviant, or a pervert. But the novel chronicles the changes in society, too, as when Alice first sees the word homosexual in print, even a negative reference is an admission that such people do exist. As the author writes in the introduction, knowing this history is important for both gay and straight. Is already starting to repeat itself. History is starting to repeat itself, but things have changed. For one thing, we have stepped out of the shadows and we have allies. Inner CD Dreamland, offered by Woodstock Arts, Jennifer Maidman writes of the conspiracy of dreamers, where you can be anything you like. She sings of an invisible revolution that is dangerous and free. Jennifer is transgender and identifies as a two-spirit person. She recorded this album with her longtime partner, Annie Whitehead, and she has toured with other musicians such as Joan Arbitrating and Boy George. Her music is haunting and liberating and tells us that not only have things changed, but that we are part of the change. There used to be a saying in the lesbian community that we are everywhere. Now things are different, and most of us acknowledge that we are more alike than different. Perhaps the newest saying could be that we are everyone. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Take you to the land of dreams.
This is revolution.
Cause I can do anything I want here. And I can say anything I like here. Oh, yeah.
You can hear all of Jennifer Maidman's Conspiracy of Dreamers on her new CD, Dreamland. And check out Dakota Lane's video documentary on the making of the CD at thiswayout.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week's program material came from John Dyer V and Francis O'Brien, produced by Steve Pride, Gracie Golden, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Outcasters Drew, Callie, and Alex, produced by Mark Sophos, and from Janet Mason. Justin Bieber, The Earls, and Jennifer Maidman performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WOJB Hayward, Wisconsin, 2ECR Eden, New South Wales, KAZU Pacific Grove, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.